Hey, what's going on, everybody? Excited to welcome Music Record Shop on sponsoring the Rock Paper Podcast. Go down and check them out, 4191A Manchester Avenue in the Grove, right between the demo and the ready room. Official store hours are Tuesday through Sunday, 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. They do a new music happy hour every Friday. Go down and get yourself some new music. They've got a great local selection. They have also a CD, vinyl, and some tapes. So go pick up some new music, support local, musicrecordshop.com.
Podcast is kind of like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Hey, this is Joe Marlotti, professional comedian and professional voiceover talent. You're listening to Rock Paper Podcast. Where are the scissors? Did you drop the scissors? Were you running with the scissors? Where are the scissors?
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Shane Presley here, Rock Paper Podcast, episode Woo-hoo! 101.
Wow.
Yeah.
Part of a whole new generation I am.
Hell yeah. This is hanging out this episode with my good friend Joe Marlotti. Welcome to the show, man.
I am excited. This is the most exciting thing I've done since we, you know, when we grew up together. You know, when we used to go take those airplane flights to Dallas for the peanut butter and banana sandwiches that your dad Elvis enjoyed so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I remember those days.
Those were the days.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. Well, I suggested this place. We're at Caldi's Coffee.
Yeah.
And, because I shop local.
Yeah.
And, but I didn't know that there'd be people, you know, some yuppies over our shoulder trying to discuss, you know, the year-end financial statistics.
Right.
So we'll see. Yeah. We'll see if they keep it down. If not, I may have to go give them a forearm.
Sure. Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, whatever
it takes.
Whatever it takes, yeah. Yeah, man. I was really excited when this, I think we've been kind of working, trying to figure it out, a date for a while. And
yeah.
You've been busy out working and things, but it was worked out this time where you're in town and
yep.
was able to catch you, and I was excited that it all worked out.
Yeah, I'm rarely in town. I'm working on cruise ships these days a lot, so I'm never keep it down, people. And I'm on cruise ships a lot, so I'm always like out of the country.
Yeah,
and I don't know, you know, I never know when I'm going to be in town. It just so happened that I caught your. You were fishing on Facebook for guests, apparently, and I bit. So now I'm here. So yeah, I love doing these. These are fun, and this is one of the. I haven't done a podcast in a long time, but I really like the look of yours. I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
On the computer.
It's really important for the.
I haven't listened to any of them, but it looks good. Yeah. Looks great. So.
Yeah, I've been trying to. Work my way around town, talking to all my friends, and help plug some dates and stuff. And
fun. So, it's good.
Yeah, it's always.
So go ahead, plug some dates. What do you got coming up?
Oh, okay. I'll be at. No, I don't have.
Get my wisdom teeth pulled.
Yeah, and, right. Yeah. You can see
all the fun stuff.
Yeah. Catch me at the Caldi's Coffee. On
yeah. In the Chesterfield Valley, trying to go over year-end figures.
But you can catch Joe coming up at Valley Park Funny Bone.
I'll be at Valley Park Funny Bone August 27th, and it's been a long time since I've been at any Funny Bone, since I've been traveling so much, since I've been, you know, out on the high seas selling my soul. And but the Valley Park Funny Bone on August 27th through the next couple of days.
31st or something?
Something like that. And then I'll be the week following that, I'll be at Westport.
Yeah.
So there'll be chances for everybody. Just plan it. Just Google map it. Just put it on Google Maps and figure it out which one you want to go
right.
to. Right.
Yeah.
So
that's it's nice to have the two clubs in town, I think,
offering the same comic back to back. Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so I mean, if like it's like a like a second chance. You know, hey, you missed him last week, and here, try again.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I like that. And they're quite—they're actually quite different, the clubs. The clientele's right. always different, yeah. too. So, and I live right next to Valley Park. I can literally walk to the club if I wanted yeah. to. Yeah. I mean, it hurt, but I could do it.
All right.
I wouldn't die, you know. In fact, there's been nights at the Valley Park Funny Bone where I probably should have walked home instead of driving that mile and a half. So, but we made it work.
Well, that's always interesting over there. Goes that train track that runs right behind there.
That's something you just don't get everywhere. Yeah. You know, they don't charge extra for that. They don't charge. That's free if you're going to be there. You get to hear the train like. Right, usually right when it's right before a very crucial punchline
right.
or setup that you're just about to get it out, and then all of a sudden the train goes by. And for those of you who haven't been to the Valley Park Club, I'm going to tell you that train track is about 30 feet behind the club.
It's
right there. It's right there. So when all the employees go outside to smoke, sometimes they actually can lose digits on their feet. They got to be careful.
So. We're short one for the next show, so we lost a waitress during my last smoke break, and
yeah, it's sad. I mean, but that's part of the job. You know, you got to be prepared for that. You know, I mean, there are hazards to every job, and that's one of them. Yeah. The Valley Park Funny Bone.
I was actually there a week ago or so, and I was recording with Tim Convey.
Yes,
and
I loved him on the Carol Burnett Show.
Yeah, he was great. And we. He was hosting the open mic that night, and there was a young woman came up for her first appearance at the open mic, and the train goes through her set.
Yes,
and,
yes.
So I just like I laughed at that, the fact that like her very first time on stage, and then she gets the train blowing through her set in there.
Baptism by fire on that one. Yeah. Welcome to comedy, sweetheart. Yeah. Yeah, welcome to Funny Bone Comedy. That's a Valley Park show. So,
it's fun to see that there's more and more comedy coming up in town. There's a lot more. A lot of these guys have been doing different alternative rooms and these other open mics,
like Jilly's Steakhouse.
Yeah,
all the big ones. Yeah. I remember the Grove Deli. That was a big one back in the day.
Right.
I have not been checking out any of the new comedy here in town.
Yeah.
And I know there's some good guys coming up. I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard them talk about themselves. And. I know a lot of the guys have got up and moved on, and they've become quasi-successful at this. But some people, like Sean O'Brien will never make it. And, Josh Arnold, good luck.
Yeah.
Some of these guys just, Jeremy Essig, one of these days. But, most of these guys, they serve a purpose. And, this guy behind me thought it was funny, the guy in the suit. I'm going to go over and slap him. I swear I am. I'm going to go slap him in the head. Yeah. So, but, yeah, no, seriously. I need to get out to an open mic night.
Yeah, there's a lot of great talent, man. And it's kind of fun, because, like you said, there's kind of went in, there was like a wave of, we had... there's Tom and John again, Nikki Glaser,
right.
Greg Warren. We had
all went and made it big.
Yeah. And then we got another young wave coming in of a lot of great young comics and stuff.
Good.
So it's exciting to see that these guys are, and they're all working together. That's what's fun. Like, it's not a competition really and stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's one thing you learn when you work at the Funny Bones in St. Louis is that you learn to be tough.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. You learn to be tough. It's not a tough room, but the crowds are demanding. They want comedy, right? And they're pretty well versed. They know what's funny and what's not. And then you have to deal with the staff, and that's different. That's different right there.
Right.
If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. To hell with New York. The Funny Bone is where you need to make it. It's one of these deals where so many good comics come out of St. Louis because they're seasoned well. You know what I mean? And because they work under this rigorous demands of being there and not trying to drink too much. And occasionally being funny, so that works out well. I love that. Actually, if you want to know the truth, I think these guys you're talking about, Tommy and Nikki, and Kathleen Madigan and all these guys, they came up and came through the Funny Bone, and they were so ready by the time that they left, you know, they went out to L.A. and New York and every place like that, because they worked here.
Yeah.
It's a great club. Great club. So.
Yeah, it's I've seen all sorts of, you know, great talent coming through there, and it's crazy. I mean, to some of the people I've, you know, and then, of course, like, then, you know, next year they come through town, they're at the pageant or whatever, you know,
right,
stuff like that.
Right, like and they still won't call me to open for them, so I know what you're talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
But you've been one of the guys I've been following for many years down there. And
it's because I've been doing it since 1968.
Whoa, 68, huh?
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe it was 86. I'm dyslexic. Anyway, people ask me that all the time. I've never done anything else. I've never had a real job. I've always been a stand-up comic.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm broke, you know, and I have a debilitating drug habit. But, you know, aside from that, you know, I'm wanted in three states. But
only three?
But I just to say that I have never done anything else but comedy makes people go, you're kind of a loser. And I said, yeah, I am. But I wear that as a badge of honor.
Right. Yeah. That's exciting, though. You know, it's nice to have that badge.
Yeah. Well, don't wear it. I don't wear that badge out very much. Yeah, it's kind of, I keep that at home in the closet.
Yeah. So how'd you get into doing these cruise ships?
Well, there's an interesting story right there that everybody know. David Carlo, who used to be a manager of many different Funny Bone clubs back when there was a million of them. And there's, I'm gonna go kill the others. I swear, I'm gonna go over there and pour hot coffee on all of their crotches. So anyway, the David Carlo, who used to be, he used to manage the clubs, and then he started being like the general manager for the Funny Bones for the whole thing. And then as the kingdom kind of collapsed into itself a little bit, and comedy became a little less crazy popular, he branched out, opened some of his own rooms, went into artist management, blah blah blah. He's a bon vivant of comedy. Hustler is what he is.
Yeah.
And he got the job at booking all of the comedians for Carnival Cruises.
Okay.
Don't know how he got it.
Yeah.
Don't know who he slept with. But he got the gig. And he called a couple of his boys who were St. Louisans, notably Dan Chopin, Mark Sweeney, myself. Yeah. And he said, I think you guys could make it out here. And we did. We have. All of us have been working on the ships now for three, four years. So it's going very well for us.
Yeah.
We really have to dumb it down. But, you know, we get paid, and we get to eat on the Lido deck buffet.
Oh, yeah. That doesn't sound that bad.
No. Well, depends on which ship you're on.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never done any of those cruise ship things, but, you know, I guess, I don't know.
Oh, you've ever been on a cruise?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take back what I said about dumbing it down.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, you do have to do a completely different show on a cruise ship than you do on in a comedy club.
Sure.
So the things you do in a comedy club, what I'm saying is the people who come to your show on a cruise ship aren't comedy club patrons.
Right.
They're cruise ship patrons. This is an added bonus for them to come see good comedians.
Yeah.
And there are great comedians on these ships. All right, and so you gotta adjust your act accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, man, I can't do the material I want to do. And it's like, nope, not if you want to make the money on the things. But you just got to understand your crowd. It's all about understanding your crowd.
Sure.
You know, so when I'm doing a crowd and there's 17 8-year-olds in the front row, you know, I can't do all the pot jokes.
Right.
You know, unless they've got some.
Yeah.
And if they do, then I'll go for it. But
I went to this show once at SIUE.
Yeah.
And it was Steve Byrne and Derek Hughes. And Derek Hughes is now actually on America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
He's,
yeah.
And doing well for himself, magician, comedian of sorts. And but he opened the show, and that was like the family-friendly portion of the show. And then they like came out and they said, like, hey, the rest of this is not family-friendly.
Not family-friendly, yeah.
Like, you should take your kids and go.
Yes.
And there were a lot of people that didn't listen and stayed.
You have been warned.
Yeah. And Steve comes out, and, you know, you can tell he's kind of, like, struggling to not say anything
because he's got
little kids in the front. And then he went on to do some filthy joke, and everybody got it. Like, half the crowd got up and walked out. And
that's how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had that happens on the cruise ships a lot of times. We have a PG show, and then we have an 18 plus. All right, so if you're over 18, you can stay. But sometimes people will say, "Oh, my kid's okay; he can take it." And that's when most of the comedians pull out all the stops.
Right.
If they see a kid in the audience, they go right at him,
yeah.
And it's like you were warned,
right.
You know. And it's kind of funny how that works because you wouldn't think it would be that way, but a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
The comedians, that's the thing about the carnival. They let them do what they want. They let the comedians do their material, and it's like, so they'll go no holds barred against the kids.
Yeah.
You know, so I love that.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, I'm sure those people, you probably don't get as many people just like drinking a whole bucket of beer and puking in the back in the bucket.
No, and I do miss that.
Yeah.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
Because there's really nothing funnier than making a person, you know, vomit.
Right.
I love that.
That's a Saturday midnight.
That
show.
Is. That's basically. That's exactly what it is. What was it? What was it that Steve Martin said? That why'd you get out of stand-up comedy? He said, second show Friday night.
Right.
Yeah. So, but yeah, you know, it's different. We still have problems like that. There's still the same problems that you have at a comedy club. You'll have at a comedy club on a ship.
Yeah.
You know, just it's. You know, I mean, the shows are sold out most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they see there's usually the showrooms about 300 people, and they're standing room only for all the shows.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, the things that happen at a regular comedy club happen there. It's just that it's not as long.
Right.
You know, you're only sitting and watching a half hour show on a cruise ship as opposed to a 90 minute show in a comedy club.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since you've been doing comedy since 68.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've got some road stories. And
oh, do I have road stories?
Yeah.
I have road stories galore.
Yeah.
That's one of the fun things about being on these ships is I get to work with a different comic every week who I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a comedy graveyard. It's like where all the old comedians go, you know, to go ahead and make their money before they skip the country. But yeah, I've got stories galore. I've worked with a million people, The people that have opened for me are probably some of the best comedians you've ever seen.
Right.
You know, I mean, Kathleen, I remember when Kathleen Madigan was doing open mic nights. I worked with a guy named Dan Whitney, who went on to be Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
He used to open for me.
Yeah.
I remember when Ron White was an MC. I remember, that's how long I've been doing this. I've seen these guys all, you know, come up and then become huge stars while I sit here and do a podcast at Starbucks. I'm sorry, Caldi's. Did I say that? Oh, well. We'll edit that out. So
yeah, we'll take care of that.
We'll take that. Yeah. Guys from Caldi's are going to sue. They're walking over here now. One of them's got a knife. Quiet. No, but, I mean, there's stories galore. And then it was the Wild West when I started because the comedy clubs were opening everywhere in this country. It was a boom.
Yeah.
It was in the late 80s, and it was a boom. And, you know, I mean, there's a comedy club in every rest stop, it seemed like. There was one. You know, every strip mall had a comedy club. And I remember doing a club one time in Myrtle Beach. And I got to the club, and the doors were open, and the people were hauling furniture out. I was like, what's going on? And the guy goes, I don't know. The manager left a couple of days ago, and nobody's seen him, and we can't get in his office. And now these guys are coming and taking their furniture away. They say we owe money on it. I was like, well, what's going to happen? Are we going to do a show tonight? He goes, I don't know. And then we busted into the office, this guy's office, and there's stacks of bills.
Yeah.
And it's like, uh-oh, this guy left town. What are we going to do? He goes, I don't know. Just come back at showtime, and we'll figure it out. So I came back about a half an hour before the show, and the doors were padlocked, and the waitresses were on the curb crying. And the other comedian and I looked at each other, and we said, we're doing a show.
Yeah.
Because the waitresses had not been paid in a long time. So we went down to the strip in Myrtle Beach. We handed out flyers, right, that they had that we got from the office when we broke in.
Yeah.
And then we told them when the shows were. We told them to come out. We just told everybody to come out, drink specials, the whole deal. Then we went back to the comedy club and took a padlock. Took a crowbar to the padlock. We opened up the doors, turned on the lights, and we opened up the cash register, and we did our own business, and we did a show that night. And all the money we made, we gave to the waitresses. And then we robbed that place blind. I'm sorry, but I had to get paid for something. Yeah. So I think I still have some Honey Roast Peanuts from 1989.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
And maybe some little airplane bottles of, like, Courvoisier or something like that. But I remember coming back telling that story, and I was legendary. And I was new. I was a pretty new kid at the time. I'd only been doing comedy a few years, and everybody called me Crowbar. I was Joe Crowbar Marlotti for a while. So that was a fun one. That was one of my favorite stories. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good one.
Yeah. Okay, they're leaving. Okay, right. Let's start this over. We ready to go ahead and do this for
real?
Yeah, we'll
go ahead and get started.
Okay,
now.
Great. Perfect.
So you also play guitar, right? In Blue Plate Specials?
Blue Plate Specials. We've had a blues band for a few years, and used to be, and there's a blues bar right next to the Funny Bone St. Louis, the Backstreet Blues Club. And for about 2 years there, we were the house band on Thursday nights. Back then, we were called Workin' Blue, which I thought was hysterical. A friend of mine, bass player, Tim Understall, came up with that. He was like, Workin' Blue, it's a perfect. You're a comedian. Get it? Workin' Blue. Nobody got it. Right. Nobody even said it right. So we axed that after a few years, became the Blue Plate Specials. But so we played there for 2 years. We were the house band. And I'd go up on stage, do 5 minutes, tell everybody to come over, and then we'd have a good time.
Nice.
So, and then we played there from time to time, and then we realized it's just too hard to get everybody together with me being on the road so much.
Yeah.
So we gig every once in a while, but it's a rarity now. We gig like maybe once every 3 months, mm-hmm. and that's about it. But I'm trying to maybe get that change so that I can be home a little bit more so that we can do that.
Yeah.
Because I miss being at home. My wife tells me we have daughters and they're grown. So, yeah, I need to get back. Yeah. I need to get back. Yeah. And the dog ran away in 2005. So we need to, I need to get back, look for that stuff, and show some responsibility. Yeah, I love playing blues. Blues is the only thing I play. In fact, I play blues in my, I play guitar in my act, my comedy act, too. So I love it. It's really fun, but man, labor love. I see incredibly talented musicians in this town, and I know what they make, and it's like, God, you know? You guys should be paid way more than that. You should be appreciated way more than you are.
Right.
You know? It's amazing. Music is just a weird gig.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do all I can, you know, like I said, with the show, trying to help promote a lot of my favorite musicians mm-hmm. in town to help, you know, if I can get one other person to come out to a show or whatever it is, you know, it's like
right
but you know, throw a couple bucks in the tip jar or buy a CD or whatever it takes,
right? And here's my bad is that I'm on the road all the time, so I don't get to go out and see bands anymore like I used to. And I mean, I know there's some great bands out there, great musicians, and I need to get out more and see them. But when I'm home, I kind of want to veg with my family and everything.
Sure.
And so, and my wife's not really big on, you know, the going out and listening to music or leaving the house or talking to me or I'm kidding. She's a sweetheart, and we just need to get out more and do stuff like that. So.
Well, if you're ever looking for something to do on Friday and Saturday nights and some of the other nights, but in the big weekends, I usually I'll run like a list of what's happening
right.
in town and
right.
try to get people.
I will definitely do that, and I will also. Can you turn that up?
That'd be great.
Who is ordering a frozen drink at this time of day?
Yeah.
So, the best thing would be for you to give me, you know, free tickets.
Sure.
I think that'd be the best.
I can handle it.
Okay, good. I'll keep in touch.
How do you get into blues? Is that just from your parents, or?
My parents were both black sharecroppers, and it was they grew up in Mississippi.
Sure.
And
that old story. Right?
Yeah. No, I don't know what got me into the blues. I think it was the British blues invasion because I was a huge Rolling Stones fan growing up, and then Eric Clapton and all these guys were really blues guys. And then I started trying to play a little bit like that. And once you start playing like that, then you feel it. And then Stevie Ray Vaughan came along, and then it was a slam dunk. And then I started listening to all the old guys again, and I just love it. Plus, it's only three chords, and it's all I can really play.
Right.
You know, I've tried to play rock, but there's so much rock that's crap, and country is not my cup of tea.
Because
I'm a city boy, and. But, you know, I just that's just my favorite type of music.
Sure.
You know,
I love the blues.
Jack White was he said years ago that everything I play is the blues. Yeah. And he got started in music because of the blues, a blues song he heard. And he still says it's his favorite type of music. And we play a lot of that stuff. You know, you'd be surprised how much popular music today really is blues based.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like the White Stripes was when they were, you know, hot 10 years ago or whenever. And then bands like Cage the Elephant or the sure. Black Keys. I mean, it's all blues.
Oh, yeah.
It's all blues. And it's great music.
Yeah.
So it hits you to the core. It, you know, I joke about it in my act, but I talk about it a lot how the blues is for everybody. You know, it's because you feel it down here. And if you don't, that means you're probably pretty wealthy.
Right.
So, yeah. I don't need to talk to you.
Yeah, I'm down to Beale and
yep.
and BB's and a lot of the blues bars downtown and
yeah.
a lot. And,
I haven't kept in touch with the St. Louis blues scene recently once again because I'm out so much. There was a guy that the last guy I remember going and seeing and following was Marquise Knox.
Oh man, he's great.
The man child.
Yeah.
And he tours the world now.
Right.
He's all over, you know, and Pokey Lafarge plays a lot of blues.
Yeah.
You know, he plays a really good mix of Americana, but it's really blues based, most of his stuff, you know. And love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. This met
Pokey. He owes me money.
This met Pokey for the first time at Euclid Records. He did like a little in-store performance mm-hmm. and a mm-hmm. signing and stuff, and with the new album. And so, first time I got to actually talk to him, and told him I said, "Hey man, let's do the show together." And then he said he would, but I sent like, you know, he got people now and stuff.
Right?
And
he's got people.
Right.
Yeah, you know how they are. They get people, and then they're done.
Yeah.
Once they get people, it's over.
So, maybe one of these days, I'll be able to track him down.
Yeah, St. Louis has always had a good music scene, and they're supposed to be working on that blues museum mm-hmm. downtown. I know that's a halting progress, you know, kind of how that works, but that'd be nice to have that going. And you know, there's a lot of things in St. Louis on the horizon that we can look forward to.
Sure.
You know, the Arch Grounds are going to be done. There's a little bit of resurgence in some. Oh my goodness, the sorority girls are here. Oh my God!
Oh
my God! Yeah, I'm looking forward to maybe spending some more time back here instead of going to, you know, Nassau again.
Nassau. I'm excited about that, the Blues Museum. I think it'd be a nice tourist attraction mm-hmm. for people to bring,
mm-hmm. you know. Because they're dying off, man. There aren't many blues guys. There aren't many authentic blues guys left.
Right.
Not at all. So, you know, B.B. King just passed away, and I wept when it happened. I shed a tear. He was my favorite.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was.
I didn't shed a tear when the guy from Milli Vanilli passed away.
Oh right.
So, okay.
I was saying something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're wearing your Milli Vanilli wig today.
I am. I like that. Yeah. It's a good look.
Yeah.
I prefer Fab over Rob.
That but yeah, I don't know. People like when BB was here last, and a lot of people kind of ripped on the show and things, but you know, it might not be what you think it's gonna, you know, it's not BB from the 70s and stuff, but, you know, he's
900 years old.
Right.
He wasn't fit to play anymore. But if you've seen Chuck Berry recently, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but you have to
realize, don't even know that Chuck doesn't even know he's there half the time.
Yeah,
he doesn't. And he thinks he's playing with you know, he thinks he's playing with the guys he played with back in the 50s. And Chuck's 9,000 years old, but people from all over the world still come and go down to the Duck Room and watch that because they can say, "I saw Chuck Berry."
Yeah.
And he's still alive. People are like, "Chuck Berry's still alive?" Yes.
Yeah.
He is. He is still alive, right?
Yeah.
I haven't read the papers yet.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Just checking.
But, you know, you have to realize you're seeing a rock and roll legend, you know, like a godfather of rock and roll.
Yes, exactly.
And it's I took my mother-in-law down there to see Chuck a while back, and then because she wanted to see him. And, we had a good time, but we started talking to a couple next to us, and they flew in from, like, Alaska or something like that just to see Chuck. And, you know, it's people plan their vacations around coming
they
to
do.
St. Louis to come see
just
Chuck.
Just come see Chuck. And that's true. People need to realize that. I remember once we went and saw him, and there was these two people who were kind of up front, and they were standing. And people kept telling them to sit down. They had chairs, but they weren't sitting. And people kept telling them to sit down. The guys weren't listening, and the people were getting mad. They were mad. They were, like, ready to throw beer bottles and stuff like that. Come to find out, they were from Sweden.
Yeah.
And they didn't even speak English very well.
Yeah.
But we still threw the beer bottles at them. You know, they had to sit their asses down, let's be honest.
Yeah. That just reminds me. I went to I saw Alabama Shakes at the Fox.
Yeah.
Just a bit ago, and you know, Fox is a beautiful theater.
It's beautiful.
Nice, comfortable seats.
Yeah.
And then Alabama Shakes, like, they got some rockers and things, but they were playing some more mellow things, and a lot of people were just enjoying the seats and like, you know,
yeah.
And there was this guy behind me. He keeps talking the whole show. He's like saying how like this is the worst crowd. He, you know, he's been to shows all around the country and stuff, and that, you know, come here to see and Alabama Shakes, and everybody's sitting. He was so like, and he's like between each song, he starts like yelling like "Stand up, St. Louis," and like all this stuff, and it's like, and it, and he's like talking the whole show, and I'm just like, man, shut
up.
Why
don't you shut up and listen to the music? I think that's why they're playing it, is for us to listen to it, not you.
It's like if they wanted us to stand up, they would play some some music that made us move, you know. So
they need to. People need to start signing waivers when they go to concerts. I will not be an asshole.
Right. Yeah.
I will not be a judgmental. You know, whatever.
Sure. Yeah, but that's the you know. I don't want to come here. I didn't pay to come here and listen to you talk about, you know, it's like I want to.
Actually, I did. Yeah. There's times I do that. Sure. I'll pay just to hear the people in the audience. You know, if the band's horrible, I'm not going to listen to them.
Yeah.
I want to see what kind of crap there is. Actually, sometimes you must admit, it's more interesting to watch the people in the audience than it is the band sometimes.
Oh, definitely. Especially like those big festival ones, like Fest or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Classic. Was it not the Warped Tour? What was the one, the Ozfest they used to have?
Man,
that was good stuff right there.
I went to
you know, the kids with the whole families, you know, mom, dad, and the kids with the nose piercings and the tattoos over the eyes, and they're all drinking from the same Jack Daniel's bottle. It's awesome.
I think a lot of times it seems like most of you see people there that spent more on the ticket than they have on dental products their whole life. You know, it's like
nicely done.
Yeah.
Yeah, my friend went and saw Steely Dan and Elvis Costello at Riverport a couple weeks ago. I'm sorry, Hollywood Casino Amphitheater.
Yeah.
And he said it was terrible. First of all, Steely Dan fans were all, he said, a lot of creased jeans, a lot of people were in floral shirts. He goes, these people do not know how to dress for a concert.
Yeah.
I said, well, how old are they, 900?
Yeah.
It's Steely Dan. And then he goes, and the saddest part about it is, how many people were wearing free casino T-shirts?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, well, that's what's going to happen now.
Right.
So.
I went to see Kiss and Poison there at the amphitheater together one night.
Yeah.
And Rat opened up.
Nice. You can't get that anywhere.
That's some quality entertainment on the lawn right there.
When you're 50-something years old and you still got your hair like that, maybe you might want to think about doing something different. You know, some of those guys are probably closer to 60. They're 60 and they all got the hair and they're, oh, so funny.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you got to be. That's what you're there for. It's funny watching these bands age and going and seeing them. And then, you know, it's like Dan Chopin's bit about.
Oh,
you know,
Stones?
The Stones, everybody charging the stage in their rocker and their walkers, you
right,
know.
Yeah.
Start me up, clear.
we'll just do everybody else's a bit.
Yeah, why not? Yeah. I can do that. Dan and I are interchangeable.
Yeah.
Anyway. Have you had Dan on your show?
No. Nope,
good luck
yet.
Getting him because he does the same thing I do. He's constantly on the ships.
Right.
He's on one right now, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and I you know, like I said, it's hard to track down, you know, some of these people, but it's been fun to just to see who I'm able to get a hold of. And
yeah, well, it's good, and thanks for supporting it. Thanks for doing this. Man. You're supporting comedy, you're supporting music, you're supporting everything that should be supported here in St. Louis.
I'm trying it.
Next time we need to talk about beer.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about beer. I don't really drink.
I don't have the time.
Yeah.
I don't have the time.
That's another podcast.
Oh, it's a whole nother podcast. There's so much great beer in St. Louis right now. It's a good time to be hammered.
Yeah.
Really, it's a great time. So much great beer in this town.
I was just talking to Steve Ewing, and he, they're having a Urge beer coming out for their 20th anniversary of receiving the Gift of Flavor. So,
that's great!
Yeah, so they have an
art. That's a good idea.
Yep.
We'll all get hectic and drink it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be great. I wonder if you drink it, if you have the urge to go to the bathroom.
Hey-o.
You know, folks, usually you got to pay for that. So that's free for all you listeners.
I don't know. What you mentioned some of these guys that you came up with and that opened for you and things, and... But do you, who was like some of your big influence that got you into wanting to do comedy and things?
Oh, well, I listened to Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I became a serial rapist. And then, that was the most depressing thing in the world when I heard about that. Yeah. But I knew something bad was going on, because first of all, Bill Cosby, I mean, I listened to him when I was a kid. I listened to all his records. And that, you know, most comedians my age did, were influenced by him, because he was the Lord God King of comedy.
Yeah.
And he was always talked about as being a very bad man. Nobody ever had any nice, you know, people that I knew in production who worked with him, I never met anybody who had a nice thing to say about Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a surprise to a lot of people. And most comedians had already heard stories about that kind of stuff before it happened.
Yeah.
So, but he was one of my influences, you know, prior. Mostly George Carlin was probably my biggest influence. The first time I heard George Carlin, I was like, this is, I want to do this.
Yeah.
I want to be able to say anything I want and make it funny. And then Cheech and Chong. Sure. I used to quote those guys. Yeah, I used to quote those albums from beginning to end. And then I got influenced by Monty Python. So I've got a lot of influences from when I was young. But all of it was, you know, humor-oriented. I just didn't know I was going to go into doing stand-up comedy until I was in college. And I was in radio and television production. That was my major, because I flunked out of J school. And and whenever you had to do a project, you had to get the rest of the people in the class to be a part of it. So you got somebody to hold the camera, you got somebody to, you know, sync the sound, you got somebody to do the lights, and you got somebody to be on camera. Well, everybody always wanted me to be on camera.
Okay.
And that's when I kind of knew that maybe I'd probably be doing that rather than being behind the camera.
Yeah.
And so that's one thing led to another. That's how I became. And then I did an open mic night when I had the Funny Bone when I was in college.
All right.
And that was about the time things were taking off, and then that was it.
Yeah.
All game over.
Just ride the wave, huh?
Game over. And then I met my wife, and she stayed with me through many of those years. She's not happy about it, but she's still with me.
All right. Hey, that's something, man. That's
It's quite a success story. It's a. Can you hear? Where's the American? Where's the national anthem or whatever behind me? God Bless America. We need some music.
Yeah.
We need some music. We need an eagle flying overhead. We need Jesus weeping. That's what we need. Something. I feel like we're in Branson telling this story.
I just got married myself. So,
well, congratulations,
thanks, man.
Yeah, I've been married for 25 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
top that.
Yeah, I'm catching up. I'm almost my September is my 1 year. So.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. You're probably gonna be doing the same thing we're doing on our anniversary.
Yeah.
Maybe going and grabbing a bite.
Yeah,
maybe. We don't have any other plans.
Yeah, I actually, it was kind of funny. So Lou Fest is coming to town again.
Not a very good lineup, in my opinion.
Yeah, some people were pretty disappointed. There's quite a few bands I really like to see there, but and actually my friends Clockwork will be opening up one of the days. I forget which
actually
one.
The local stuff's always great.
Yeah.
It's the national headliners that aren't really pulling the line. Yeah. I mean, last year, you're never going to top last year with what they have, Outkast and
Arctic Monkeys,
Outkast. That's good stuff.
Vintage Trouble. Those guys killed
good
it.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Good stuff. But the local stuff's always good, because we can always pull people, you know, there's quality here. But you know that it's the big headliners, you know, like Hozier, I think, and some band from the '90s. I can't remember who. Whatever.
I bought the tickets and I got real excited. I was gonna, you know, and looking forward to it. And then I looked at the dates, and then I realized it was September 13th, which is my 1 year anniversary. So I was like, oh. Probably get in some trouble if I missed my...
Make sure you just ask your wife to go with you.
Yeah.
That's what you should do. For your anniversary this year, we're going to Lou Fest.
Hey.
I'm sure she'll love that.
Yeah.
Wear your wedding dress. I'll wear my tux. We'll do that.
All right.
We'll renew our vows on stage when Umphrey's McGee is up there, or whoever's going
to
be there.
When Hozier is singing, Take Me to Church.
There you go. You got to figure it out. I think we figure that one out right there. We're good.
Yep. But I ended up selling my tickets because I figured I'd dodge that one.
Yeah, probably be better off paying attention to your wife on that
right,
day.
Yeah,
take it from me.
Man, you were saying Carl and like he's definitely the guy's just a genius, man. I'm a big fan of his work. I read his book, Last Words, and a couple other brain droppings.
Brain droppings, yeah, all good stuff.
Past the pork chunk, or whatever, what's that one?
I didn't get that one at all. What you're talking about? Something like that. Yeah. There's a really great book. Is that the one you're talking about? The one that his wife wrote, where it's just her collected all. He used to leave like Post-it notes and notes everywhere, all over the house, all the time. He constantly was writing, constantly, which is not like me. But he constantly was writing stuff, and his wife saved all of it, and she put it in a book. And it's really, it's funny, it's touching. Some of it's a little sad, because it was all the way up to his final days. And I shouldn't say sad. It's touching, is what I'm saying. Because it gives you a little insight into what his life was like with his relationship. I mean, his relationship was like with his wife. So, it was great. Carlin was great. And then when I grew up later, people like Leno were fantastic. And then he got that job, and then it went to hell. And then you start working in the business, and people like Bill Engvall, and people like Foxworthy, and Robert Schimmel, and these guys that I worked with coming up over the years, who were just fantastic comics. And
I got to see Schimmel in Kansas City at the Improv shortly before he passed, and it was one of the best nights.
Which, you know, that'd be better than seeing him shortly after he passed.
Yeah, that'd be a little weird.
Yeah. But, you know, you'd still be afraid to ask for your money back, because you'd still be like, well, he was still good.
Yeah.
No, he's still good. I mean, he's dead, but he's still good. Yeah. But he'd appreciate us doing this, by the way. I remember once being with Schimmel in... there was a funny one up in Schaumburg, Illinois, and we used to do it up there, I used to live up there, actually, and we were doing a show, and we were going to get ready to go out and grab a bite, and it was me and Bob and a couple other people who were at the club, and we were waiting for this, you know, these people to get ready, and I said a couple of things that were dirty, and I remember Schimmel looking up at me and going, man, I can't believe you talk like that in front of the women. And I just went, what?
Yeah.
I said, have you seen your act? Have you ever seen your act? He goes, yeah, but I'm not dirty. I'm just honest. It's like, yes, you are.
Yeah.
You are quite honest. I will give you that one. All yes, you are. So.
Yeah, he was
a great guy. Yeah. As funny as they get, too.
Yeah,
can talk about everybody all night long, Shane. I drink coffee, though. I'm going to have to go to the bathroom pretty soon here. So.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well. We'll look to wrap this thing up.
I have to, because you know what? We can do this again sometime. Next time, maybe same time next year. We'll meet here at Caldy's, and we'll talk about, we'll make a list, and you can make a bigger list of the people we need to talk
to. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll hit a couple more.
And I also like to thank all of the people who actually did pose questions.
Yeah.
You actually went online and you said, hey, if you want me to ask Joe any questions, good. And they all came back with the most absolutely stupid. I can't believe these guys.
Right.
You know, Sean O'Brien. Ask him about Denny's. Somebody asked, ask him if he's a professional comedian. Oh, Jim Manley, one of the greatest trumpet players I've ever met. And, all these people, I was like, okay, great. I get it, guys. All right. But I said, we really wanted questions.
Sure.
Yeah,
that's I open it up just for fun. It's good, just to... participation, but it's usually doesn't go well.
No, it doesn't go the way it does. Everybody's a comedian, aren't they?
Sure.
Especially the comedians.
Yeah. But that's always fun. But so come out, see Joe at the Valley Park Funny Bone at the end of the month here.
August 27th, Valley Park, and I will be at Westport on September 2nd.
Yeah.
I'll be at Valley Park on the 27th through the 30th, and be at Westport from the 2nd through the 6th.
Yeah.
So that's and that's Labor Day weekend, which is why I'm headlining there.
Yeah.
Because there won't be any people there. Hopefully it rains and the Cardinals are out of contention. Probably won't happen, either one of them. But think about it. If you don't have any other plans, come see Joe Marlon, professional comedian.
All right, Joe. Thanks.
All right, Shane. Thank you,
man. I appreciate it.
Tell your dad I said hi, and tell him I said uh-huh.
Yeah, well, I'll pass it on.
Okay, man. You gotta do, 'cause tonight we're the band and we're gonna be working.
you think about tender feet, it don't matter. We all got jobs we gotta do. Selling insurance or pushing tears, telling jokes or sleeping in, it don't matter. We all gonna do what we gonna do.
Hey, this is Joe Marlotti, professional comedian, and you're listening. I'm gonna try that again. Gosh, I've got to quit drinking, just like in the middle of the day.